It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk legal. And for the last couple of weeks, legally speaking, we've been talking about elder law. And we're going to continue that conversation today.
Yes. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You called him
just
Ben.
Call me Mike.
I did. I said, hey, good morning,
been
Ben.
Doing this 15 years.
Yeah. I know.
Hey, Mike.
Ben,
that's all right.
Mike, hey.
Well, I've called you Les still a couple times.
Well,
so, you
that's
know.
Okay. All right. We all know who everybody
it's
is.
All good. It's all good.
Yeah.
It's a compliment.
Well, anyway, we are here. And, Mike, it's good to be with you
good
as always.
You,
so, yes, the last couple of weeks we've spoken about this broad and sweeping topic known as elder law. I think we're going to conclude that today, although we invite our listeners to always call us at the office if they have some small question that they hear over the radio programs for the last weeks. They also, of course, as you know, Ben, can listen to our prior
Mike
to our prior radio programs.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. With that said, let's kind of hit the highlights real quickly. One of the things that Wes and I have talked about so very much, Mike, is the durable power of attorney, and how that really is one of the first things right out of the gate. I mean, just yesterday, for instance, two files back to back,
wow.
You know, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, you know, need a new power of attorney. What can we do to accomplish that? We really do need to get those powers of attorney specific up to date, because they have the specific language in them that allow the, you know, the loved one in your family, your child, your grandchild, whoever it might be, brother, sister, to create a trust on your behalf and to make gifts and to make transfers, to sign for statement of intent to return home and apply for Medicaid benefits. So the power of attorney is really critical. The next thing that we've spoken about in the last couple of weeks, and I mention it again today as we kind of summarize, is the desire for clients. And one of the first things that we many times will do is to protect the home place, the real property of the client. We do this by, of course, placing the home place, any lands. It can be other lands as well. You know, if they have more than one real property, into the posture of a trust. And basically what that does, Mike, is it takes the property out of the individual name of the client and places it over in a cubbyhole, if you will, known as a trust agreement, which is basically a contract between this person and their trustee. Again, usually their loved one in their family, their child or grandchild, brother, sister. And once it's placed in the cubbyhole, it is no longer in the individual name of the client. And this, of course, keeps their property kind of off the radar screen, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we mentioned is that there is a 5-year look back rule. Wes and I are well informed as to that rule. But there are ways in which we are able to create these trusts so that we do not trigger the 5-year look back rule. And that's very important. We certainly like to get these trusts done as soon as possible in the life of a client. But if the client has waited and we're here at the cusp of a nursing home stay, then we can accomplish the objective of getting the property off of the radar screen, even though we're within the 5-year look back rule.
Do people who think they have all their affairs in order, but however they're moving from another state into North Carolina, do they need to have legal counsel to make sure that it meets North Carolina statute?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. That kind of goes both ways. Sometimes we get questions from folks who are moving to a different state.
Right.
And it's a good idea for, you know, those individuals to, you know, build a relationship, develop a relationship with an attorney wherever they are. All the documents that we prepare are going to be enforceable in any state. So, you know, the wills that we prepare, for example, they'll be accepted in any state, but there's some reference to North Carolina general statute in our documents as well. So, you know, probably the best scenario with regard to that, if the circumstances will allow it, is for your documents to be prepared consistent with the state in which you reside.
Right.
So, but if folks are coming here from another state, you know, kind of two things about that. First of all, what I just said, make sure your documents are consistent with the North Carolina general statutes and the law dealing with North Carolina. The second part of that is this, the elder law planning, the asset protection part of this. Everything we're talking about with regard to that, protecting assets, and we were talking about a Medicaid-related issue, is North Carolina specific.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Medicaid is a federal program, so it's funded federally, but it's administered differently from one state to the next. North Carolina rules will be different than South Carolina, so on and so forth. So we're very familiar with, obviously, the North Carolina rules, deal with them every day. But when we're talking about other states, we really are not up to speed on all those. So legal counsel will be needed for, you know, someone who's dealing with these type of issues in another state.
Yeah, interesting. Because I know you have that. And also, too, people have properties around the United States. They may have a place in Florida. They may have a place up in New York, and they're living here in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. You all can get all that out on the table and get it into a document that protects that, all those properties.
Well, you kind of bring up, whether you intended to or not, another issue that we see where we're dealing with, let's say someone, this kind of goes a little bit more into estate planning and not elder law, but they really overlap a good bit. Let's say that we're dealing with someone who lives in North Carolina but has property in another state. We have a lot of clients like that.
Mm-hmm.
If the person dies in North Carolina, then North Carolina is a great place for, frankly, a great place to die.
It's a great place to live and a great place to die.
From a legal perspective. Yeah. And what I mean by that is it's an inexpensive place for your estate to be probated, mm-hmm. because the expenses relative to probate in the state of North Carolina compared to other states is very low. The max probate fee that the state will charge is $6,000, and that's, you know, if you're Bill Gates and you resided in North Carolina, I mean, that's as high as it goes. That's the cap. Lots of states don't have that. But if you own real property in another state, there's an extra layer of complexity that we have to deal with if we're dealing with an estate administration here for someone who died here. And what that is called an ancillary estate administration. So let's say that you own property in New York. It's just, you know, family property, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Well, if you die in North Carolina, then there has to be an ancillary administration in New York to basically show under the laws of New York that that property passed consistent with your will or intestate, depending on how the circumstances are, to whoever those heirs are. One way to get ahead of that and make that process easier is to go ahead and title that property in a revocable trust. Then the property passes consistent with the terms of the trust, and we don't have to be bothered with the headache of the New York law. So that's something that makes the administration of the estate cheaper overall, and it gives you control, and it keeps your desires with regard to how you want that property to pass private, and it makes it an easier process. Instead of kind of having the major estate administration here and then having this ancillary, this additional estate administration in this other state, it really is just one estate administration with a trust, and the property there's passes by deed consistent with the terms of the trust. So it's a pretty clean way to deal with that particular situation, because the laws in New York would be much more complicated than what we have to deal with here for that property up in New York. If it's in a trust, boom, it just passes consistent with the terms of the trust.
Yeah.
You have to plan ahead to do that.
Sure, like anything else. I didn't want to take you off track, guys, because you had other things you wanted to talk about. I was just curious about that.
But, you know, that's a great question, though.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing about this concept of avoiding the ancillary administration with a piece of real property in a different state, we do see a lot of that. You know, young retirees will come here, and they'll keep the little place at Adirondack or out in the hills of Pennsylvania. Maybe they have a place in Florida. Maybe they still go up to one of the Great Lake areas, you know, have a place up there. We've just had so many clients like that through the years.
Well, and of course, I see it in our Marines and Sailors.
Absolutely.
You know, they can have property in California.
And so consequently, you know, this placing the property into a North Carolina revocable trust works well. And sometimes, Mike, that will dovetail, if you will, very easily with the asset protection planning. Okay. The revocable trust that we're using for purposes of avoiding the ancillary probate can also be used for the asset protection elements of that file. We can combine the two.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing to say. Now, after we protect the home place, getting back on track where we were, Mike,
sure.
After we protect the home place, which is very, very important to people, any other real property that they have, then absolutely we look at then the liquidity of the client. Liquidity really means anything else. You know, liquidity doesn't just simply mean the checking account. It can mean the IRA. It can mean the annuity. It can mean the stock account, the bonds, anything that the client has that they could liquidate. Okay, that of course is what Medicaid is going to look at, including any cash value in a life insurance policy that's over and beyond $5,000. The concept being that if the client can go into the life insurance policy and take out $25,000, then they can take out $25,000, and spend it on their care. So anything that the client can obtain is countable. That's the magic word, the liquidity in the file. And we do look at this then, Mike, and we begin to advise the client in a manner of many different permutations of how we can protect the liquidity. There are so many things that Wes and I are able to do given the opportunity to do it. And of course it's going to depend on the amount of the liquidity, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, some files we have, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. Other files we might have, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000. So it's going to depend on the amount of the liquidity or the accountable, liquid assets available. And then we begin to work with the client, and we begin to, what lawyers do well is to give the client options. Tell the client what the options are. The client then, of course, makes a decision. They don't have to make it that very day, mm-hmm. but they might consult with their family, which many times they do, their son or daughter. And then they, over a course of, you know, a week or 10 days, give us a decision on what options they want to apply.
So you're basically giving the client different roadmaps, different itineraries to get to the mm-hmm. same destination, whether you want to take the direct mm-hmm. route, the scenic route. You're laying it all out there for them, but the ultimate goal is to protect their assets. That's protect their real property, protect their liquidity. So,
right.
Very good. Always be prepared. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back with more of Harvell and Collins. You can check them out online at harvellandcollins.com or give them a call, 726-9050. We'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. In the studio is Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell. Gentlemen, we're talking about elder law and getting through this segment today. We may wrap up our whole course study here in elder law. So who wants to take the next bite?
Well, you know, Cecil was talking about, you know, talking about a power of attorney and how important that is. And, you know, if you listen back to our last several weeks, you'll hear us talk about power of attorney, power of attorney, power of attorney. You know, that's just as important of a document as a will is, in my opinion, especially when we're talking about this asset protection aspect of it. And because, you know, the reason is because, you know, a lot of what we're doing up front with regard to protecting the real property is done, let's say, for a client before there's an imminent need. But we're really not doing anything with regard to their liquidity, their stocks, their bonds, whatever they may have, other assets. They're just maintaining those assets in their own individual name and carrying on with their life just like they always have.
Right.
Because there's no need to do any planning with that as far as structuring those property, that personal property right now. But what's vitally important is to make sure that we have the right and ability to do that at a later date when and if the person, you know, falls and breaks a hip or is in a car accident or has a stroke and ends up in the hospital and discharged and maybe in a condition where they can't make decisions themselves. They can't sign the documents at that point in time that would be necessary to allow us to do the planning to protect the other things that they have. So if they're in that type of condition, then obviously if we don't have the good power of attorney that we keep talking about, then our hands are tied with regard to protecting the rest of the assets. So However, when we do have that power of attorney that has all the appropriate language in it, has usually the spouse, if not the spouse, then one of the children, and then the next child named as the power of attorney, the attorney in fact, then all we're really doing is we're kind of regrouping with the family at that point in time, communicating with them about the fact that, you know, we met 3 years ago, so glad we put this planning together. Unfortunately, Dad has had this fall. It's now time for us to talk about the next step. And at that point in time, we're using the power of attorney in order to mold the clay so as to get the absolute best results, protect assets for the family, make sure Mom is not left destitute, you know, if she outlives Dad for 15 years or whatever it may be. And that simple one document, that power of attorney, is so incredibly vital for us to do those things at that point in time. If we have just the short form, simple power of attorney that we see a lot of times, that's not enough. It doesn't have all the language in it that we need. So the details, as we say, the devil's in the details, right?
Right.
So the details in that power of attorney, are very, very important, incredibly important, so that, you know, we can have all of the authority necessary in order to help this family use the law that's available to them to protect, you know, what they
to
have.
To their advantage.
Yeah. In the event we don't have it, in some cases we might have, we might be stuck in a guardianship posture, which is a, you know, minimum 30 to 60 day process. Expensive, you know, laborious, tedious, stressful, you know, it, instead,
when you can
the
have
simple
it all $75,
$100 power of attorney, cheap, you know, document in the world of doing legal things, that is so vital. So we can't stress that power of attorney enough.
Mike, I think as we begin to conclude this area of the law, again, we encourage our listeners to listen back to the programs for the last couple of weeks. Again, re-listen to this program. I think if you listen to all three programs, it might kind of piece it together for you. We also have a handout at our office, by the way, a written, if you will, handout on things on this area of the law that we could mail to any of you if you would like to receive that handout. But I think one of the key things that I want to say as we begin to conclude, Mike, is that don't be one of these folks that this is what I've read, this is what I've been told. You know, well, I waited too long. I'm within the 5-year period. Well, you know, my mom has way more than $2,000, which is applied. There's nothing I can do with, you know, with her $100,000 or $200,000. I understand that I can't get Medicaid as a result of the fact that maybe my loved one is still in assisted living or in memory care. You know, again, what we find out, Mike, if I'm making sense here, is that, you know, make your appointment with the elder law lawyer and let the good lawyer really give you the bottom line on these issues.
Yeah.
I just find so many folks that come in and say just all the time, well, I just had no idea, you know, or I was told, you know. My mom deeded this property to us 3 years ago. DSS, Department of Social Services, has told her we've got to wait 2 years because Mom deeded the property to us 3 years ago. Okay, so we've just been waiting now all of a year. We've been paying the nursing home for a year because we're waiting for our 2 years to go by. In other words, seek out the legal advice and get the answers from an elder law lawyer that can guide you down the right path.
I think if people are having a conversation with their neighbor over the fence and they say, I heard from a fellow that, if you preface your sentence like that, you're probably not informed properly. Get legal counsel to get the facts straight.
Wes, right, you or add if to you this. Googled it.
Or you Google. Yeah, look, I saw it on the internet somewhere.
That's what you get back. You get yeah. That's just very dangerous information.
In this area of the law, there is just so much information on the internet,
sure,
concerning elder law and elder law issues and Medicaid application. And again, it's just overwhelming. And one little factor, by the way, can change the outcome or the goal, the path by which your lawyer is going to guide you through the steps.
It could be enormous if you miss that one step.
Correct.
Too, and right. painful, too, at the same time. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll wrap this segment up. If you want to get that handout from Harvell and Collins, give them a call at the office, 726-9050. They're located at 1107 Bridges Street here in Morehead City. They'd be happy to mail it out to you. Just give them a call, request that copy, that pamphlet that Cecil is alluding to. And we're going to come back after this quick break. We'll wrap up Let's Talk Legal. Stay tuned. You're back with Let's Talk Legal, and gentlemen, this has been an excellent conversation over the past couple of weeks. I think that you put out a lot of great information that's helpful to the listeners. Anything else you want to wrap up and conclude with?
Yeah, you know, like Cecil was saying, don't be, you know, one of these people that heard from the neighbor, well, you can't do anything, or spoke with someone at church, you know, and he said, I can't do anything, or even spoke with your CPA, you can't do anything, or read it on the internet.
Yeah.
So just go get the best information. So I think that the listener probably would then have the burning question, okay, well, Mr. Collins, I appreciate you saying that on the radio. What does this mean? What do I do if I want
step?
To sit down and get the information?
Sure.
And what the listeners need to know is that, setting an appointment, sitting down with either me or Mr. Harvell to go over what your particular situation is a matter of just calling our office and setting an appointment. So then the next question, what does that cost? Well, that doesn't cost anything. To come in, sit down, go over what the situation is. We get all the facts, the circumstances, and you don't have to gather up a bunch of information. Just bring what you have in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll ask the questions about the family unit, about the property, about the, if there's a medical condition, so on and so forth. And then we'll give you the advice with regard to what needs to be done and tell you what planning we think needs to be done, we recommend. And we would certainly, proceed to do that. That, what you hear, initial consultation,
yeah.
Sit down, talk,
yeah.
Get the best information is free of charge. So there's really a no-risk situation. Mike, we've seen people over the years that don't do that, and then the family ends up with us, even potentially after the person dies but has received Medicaid, maybe because they cited an intent to return home and thought the home was going to be off the radar screen, for example, and they've got a $100,000 lien they've got to deal with. Well, a little bit of planning up front, we would have avoided that completely. So it's much more difficult on the back end if we haven't done the planning to deal with these types of very expensive lien-type propositions. So ounce of prevention, right?
Yep.
So that generally is the way that looks as far as setting the appointment, sitting down, discussing it, no risk situation. And then you've got the best information. You kind of cut through all the fat that's out there because there's mm-hmm. a lot of information. There really is on all legal topics, but probably on this topic more than just about anything else, I would say.
And I think, too, a lot of the conversations over the fence, you as attorneys would call that hearsay. It's not admissible.
Not admissible.
It's hearsay.
Right.
But I think the takeaway that I've gotten from over the past couple of weeks on this topic is to be prepared ahead of time. Be proactive.
No doubt.
And not wait for that incident to occur. It's much like getting a hurricane prepared plan in your house, an evacuation route, and then supplies needed rather than waiting for the day in which the storm actually hits.
No doubt.
Be prepared. You may not have to use it, but in the case we're talking about here, about durable power of attorney, you probably will have to use it.